All right. The Judiciary Committee will come back to order, please. All right. We now have before us Senate File 778. This is Senator Pappas's bill. A note to the committee and to the public, we are only discussing the provisions pertaining to personal care attendance, and in particular the data that is being collected in this bill in Article 2, Section 1, Subdivision 9, Article 2, Section 2, Subdivision 11, F and G. And there are a few other provisions in Article 1 as well that are parallel sections to those. So that's the only portions of the bill that come within the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee, and we will only be taking testimony and giving consideration to those provisions. Senator Pappas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The purpose of Senate File 778, Section 2, is to improve access to quality home care services in Minnesota through the creation by the Department of Human Services of a list of home care workers, as the chairman mentioned, only for the use of a new DHS advisory council and for possible representational purposes. The list in question is specifically a list of those home care workers in self-directed programs where the client selects, hires, directs, and can terminate the employment of their specific home care worker or workers. The bill does not affect those workers who are hired directly by private agencies. In order to stabilize the home care workforce, which sees as much as a 50% turnover in a given year, and to attract more people into a field with growing demand as our state ages, this bill would create a workforce council to advise DHS on how to improve quality and access to self-directed home care services, and would allow workers to choose to form a union, and if they did so, to bargain with the state over wages and benefits. Both of these functions require the DHS create a list of workers for use by the council in advising DHS and for use by an exclusive representative to facilitate the representational process. This workforce is different than many others in that there is no single place of work, and that place of work is explicitly the home of their client receiving services through medical assistance. As a result, the list created by this bill would be of home care workers in self-directed programs along with their home addresses to protect the private data of their clients. And that is specifically stated in Article 2, Section 2, Subdivision 11, Paragraph F, on page 10, lines 10 through 27 to 10 through 28. The list shall not include the name of any participant or indicate that an individual provider is a relative of a participant or has the same address as a participant. This list will allow the Workforce Council to track information like workforce stability and geographic distribution, as well as allowing workers through their exclusive representative to speak with fellow home care workers about their common interests and potential interests in forming a union. Article 2, Section 1, Subdivision 9 lays out the process by which 500 workers can make a showing of interest to allow their exclusive representative to receive this list from DHS. This process is an additional protection not currently in PLRA. Mr. Chairman, I would like to invite we have one testifier, and that's Summer Spica, to come to. And while she's coming, I do have a technical amendment, the A73 amendment, that maybe someone could offer.
Sure. Let's do that.
Suggested by counsel.
Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, members, the first is a cross-reference correction to where the list is. It's just the paragraph's wrong in the bill. And the second relates to the registry, which is in Article 2. And it's been described and explained to me that this is kind of an opt-in registry for the providers, but the language wasn't clear about that. So it specifically says it's providers in the registry who have consented to be included in the registry.
Okay. I'll offer that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin moves the A73 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I would also like to ask if a committee member would, on page 6, subdivision 11, would delete that subdivision. It created some confusion in a previous committee, and it's really not necessary to be in the bill. It was suggested, some lawyers suggested it as comfort language, but we don't really think it's necessary.
Some lawyer.
Some lawyer suggested it, and some other lawyer said it's not really necessary.
Yeah. They're all the same.
We'll go with the lawyer who said it's not necessary. That's subdivision 11 on page 6.
Okay, and Senator Pappas, there is a comparable subdivision in Article 1, which on page 3, also dealing with exemptions under federal antitrust laws. So would you like to have that included in your proposal to delete?
Yeah, I believe it's identical language, so yes.
The subdivision 10, so...
almost identical.
Senator Goodwin will move to delete subdivision 10 on lines 3.34 to 4.3, and on lines 6.31 to 6.36. Is there any discussion of that amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, that narrows the committee's jurisdiction even further, so less work for you to do.
We appreciate that.
This is Ms. Summer. Speak up.
All right, Ms. Summer, welcome to the committee.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Summer Spica, and I am a home care worker. I have been for 4 years, and I want the right to form a home care union because we face low wages, no benefits, and we need a voice to change this. In order to be able to do that, home care workers need to be able to talk to one another about our common interests and our goals. Right now, we are very isolated. We all work in individual homes. We have no way to contact one another and no way to find other home care workers so that we can get to know each other. This is why our bill asks the state to create a list of those home care workers that could, so that we could choose to form a union. This would protect the privacy of home care clients, but also allow us to communicate with one another as workers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Please remember to sign the board there. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Summer Spica?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee. You made mention that you suffer under low wages, and are you in your business? Do you run the daycare center that you're taking care of children?
I'm not a daycare worker. I'm a home care worker.
Home care worker.
Yes.
Could you tell me what that means?
I'm a personal care attendant. I take care of a young girl with some special needs.
Okay. That's all the question I have for now, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Ms. Spica? Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. All right. I just want to again emphasize that we're dealing with the particular subdivisions 9 and no longer 11, Section 1 and Section 2, subdivision 11, paragraphs B, clause 11, and paragraph F, and the comparable provisions in Article 1, Section 3, subdivision 4, and subdivision 5. He's having to do with the list that is created. Ms. Pontius, can you identify for us what is the data practices status of the list that is being created?
Mr. Chairman and members, the underlying data in this list would be public because right now under the welfare data statute, the names and addresses of licensees are public data. What this does is actually create a list, and it lays out ground rules for how those lists have to be shared with these employee organizations. The other thing that it does, if you look... for example, on page 3, starting on line 4, when the commissioner does provide these lists to the employee organizations, they have to notify every person whose name is on the list in writing that it's been provided. And so that's not something that would normally be required under the Data Practices Act with respect to public data.
So the bill is creating these lists or allowing the compilation. It's a shell, so it's mandating the compilation of the lists, and when there's a request for those lists to be provided, it's mandating that the commissioner shall notify the persons on the list that their name was given out to the requester.
Mr. Chair.
Am I understanding that correctly,
yep.
Counsel?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, is there Senator any question to counsel? Is there any opportunity for the subject to remove themselves from the list, or can they? Is there a consent element here? I thought I heard you say consent.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lumberman, in this list, no. These would be inclusive lists. The one that the amendment affected is a different. That's a registry. That's later in the bill, which is a different thing.
We'll be getting to that soon. All right.
Well, Senator Limmer, let's clarify. What do you mean we'll be getting to that soon? We've gone over the bill now, so.
Well, there was reference, Mr. Chair, to another list and another request for data.
Ms. Pontius, can you point out to us where you're referring to?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's Article 2, Section 2. Subdivision 11. At.
Subdivision 9.
Subdivision
page 6.
Nine. Actually, it's on page 9, line 29. That's where it starts.
So there we've got on this is subdivision 11, paragraph C, 4. That provides for the public registry. Can you explain exactly what that does, Counsel? The public registry? Or Senator Pappas, or your witness?
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Zaffron. I'm a public policy specialist with SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. The intention of this public registry is to be an opt-in matching service for home care workers and home care clients so that they can better find each other when need be, when home care clients need additional service providers, and when home care workers are looking for additional hours.
And is this... I'm sorry, give me your last name again, sir.
Zaffron.
Mr. Zaffron, is this a voluntary list?
Yes, it is.
That's the amendment.
Okay. So this is what the amendment that we put on, the A73 amendment, made this a voluntary registry. So only those who consent to be in the registry. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, perhaps since we have someone here that might be able to answer my question, would an individual that would be on a call list be able to have themselves removed from that list, and how would they do that?
Senator Limmer, are you referring to the registry that we're discussing right now?
I'm referring to the opt-in voluntary list that you just mentioned.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, that is correct. This is intended to be an opt-in registry, and you would be able to remove yourself to be from being listed on that registry as well.
All right.
Are there any other questions?
Just to orient me, where is this origination of this list language in the bill?
Page 9, line 29. The registry.
Mr. Chairman, there are several lists. We should call this the registry, just to be clear, to distinguish it from the previous list.
So if I understand this correctly, Senator Pappas, this particular registry is geared toward people being able to find services. Or work. Okay, so if a person needs personal care attendant, they can turn to this registry, and providers who have voluntarily put their name on it can get a call. And people are looking for work as a personal care attendant can put their name on here, hoping to get the call.
And they can interview people, and it's just a way to help connect them up.
Okay, so this has nothing at all to do with the question of organizing potentially for a union?
No.
Okay, just so we
are
clear. Senator Lim.
That begs another question then. The list of individuals and their contact information in order for someone to, let's say, talk about union activities or negotiations, can any subject to that list remove themselves from that list?
Mr. Zaff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the intention of the list that you're referring to is for two purposes. One, for the Advisory Council to the Department of Human Services to engage in workforce development activity, and two, for the facilitation of these workers to be able to choose whether or not they want to form a union. And so for that purpose, it is not intended to be an opt-out list, because there needs to be able to, for the election process to take place, the Bureau of Mediation Services needs to actually declare what this bargaining unit would be.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer.
Where is that in the legislation? What page in line?
Page 6, subdivision 9, list access.
Page 2.
The question I have, Mr. Chair, is that in most areas of data practices, whenever we create a list, we give someone not only notice of what their rights are on that list, but whether they have or how they can remove themselves from a list, whether it's an opt-in or opt-out provision. I'm kind of surprised that we have neither in this provision. And the question would be, does an individual have a right to exclude themselves from having contact with, let's say, the outside world or other, even if they're co-workers in another facility somewhere else? Do they have a right to do that under this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, I think we might need someone to help us with the PELRA rules, because we're trying to be consistent with how PELRA works. So
okay.
Whoever
call
might be
witness
here that wants to talk about PELRA.
Is there anyone here who can help us on PELRA questions?
Oh, yeah, Eric knows how the list works. He's the list guy.
Yeah. All right, sir, why don't you state your full name for the record.
Chairman Latz, my name is Eric Lato. I am the Chief of Staff for AFSCME Council 5.
All right, and you're the list guy, so.
Well, it's.
What do you know about PELRA lists and this?
Yeah, my knowledge of the PELRA list involves extensive organizing activity around in exercising at the PELRA with BMS, and the lists generally have been public. Once a union has organized or filed for a petition, most of the time voter lists are eligible for those that ask once the process starts.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, sir, you said that the list becomes public?
Yeah.
Is it exclusive to the membership that could have that list, or does the public at large have access to that list?
Chairman Latz, Senator Limmer.
Was it Lato?
Lato, L-E-H-T-O, yes.
Thank you.
In other union elections have been conducted under PELRA. Those that are eligible are the names of which are free and open to the public. And if you think of most of the instances as referenced even in here, the names of the individuals that participate are free and open to nearly everyone. And so the fact that a union petition has been filed for union activity doesn't change that.
Okay.
Ms. Pontius, do you have something to add?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll just reiterate what the witness said. I mean, this is public data that's going in. The list would be public. I mean, anybody could go in and ask for it, because mm-hmm. the bill does not make it private.
And is current PELRA data the same?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with that. I don't know how that would interplay.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
We did put in something that's not in PELRA, which is the 500 name threshold. So once the bargaining organizing unit has collected 500 names, then they would get access to the entire list in the PCA situation. I believe in the AFSCME, in the family daycare provider situation, those names are already public because they are licensed or registered as legal unlicensed. So it already is public data.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer.
One last question to our testifier. Lato is a familiar name. You related to a guy named Brad?
I get the question a lot. No.
Lato.
Chairman Latz, Senator Limmer, no, I am not. We are from the same part of the range, but we are not related, and it just happens to be like a Finnish Johnson. So even to make it more confusing, at one point I did work at the AFL-CIO. We were the only office that had two Latos and no Johnsons. So
so what you're saying is they're everywhere.
Right. Senator Limmer, we're getting a little off topic. Yes.
Sorry,
here.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, one question.
Senator Limmer and then Senator Hall.
This seems like a jobs-type related issue, this topic. Is this intent to go to the Jobs Committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
All legislation related to PELRA are in the jurisdiction of state and local government, not jobs.
Oh, is it intended on going to that committee?
It already has. It had three and a half hours.
All right.
Senator Hall, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall knows all too well.
Yes, thank you. On the registry list, is there just one registry list, or are we talking about lists?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall.
Mr. Zaffron.
The bill for the opt-in registry, which is intended to be a matching service for home care workers and home care clients, the bill language currently references that the commissioner, along with the consultation with the council, would provide for the maintenance of one or more public registries. To my knowledge, in other states where these have been created, is generally one opt-in registry that is created for this purpose.
And the Mr. Chair, the reason to have or more is what?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, I'm not sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Hall, it could just be to provide a little flexibility if, for example, they wanted to do a registry that was just working with the elderly or one that was just working with children, just working with certain types of disabilities, maybe somebody is not trained or feels competent to work with anyone that needs oxygen I'm just guessing as to there might be circumstances where you might want to develop more than different registries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Senator Pappas, wouldn't you use the one registry for that though? And not, you wouldn't be setting up other registries, it'd be come from the one, it'd just be sublists or whatever way you want to call it. I wonder if we could I would move them. Will we strike or more on public registries, line 9.29.
That's fine, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Hall is right. It could just be sublists.
Okay, Senator Hall moves on line 9.29 to strike the words or more. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, you'd
Senator
have
Pappas.
Plural to a single, singular.
For public, insert A and delete registries and replace it with registry.
So moved.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
This time, Senator Limmer.
I'd like to introduce the A80 amendment.
We will pass out the A80 amendment.
That's right. Senator Pappas, I didn't get an opportunity to visit with you regarding this, so we have to do it on the fly. I'm sorry about that.
I hope it's not too long.
It's not. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lato would like to, well, I think is, I don't know that Senator Limmer has moved the amendment.
Senator Limmer is introducing the A80 amendment, moves the A80 amendment. Is that correct, Senator Limmer? Senator Limmer, as you explain it, could you also please explain how this falls within the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, this area of law is going to create a new chapter and verse as far as this classification of employment. I think it's important for the state to understand its obligations under local, state, and federal law in its relationship to the employer and family leave, family child care providers. It creates certain obligations that the state has to follow legally, and I'm not sure if we understand all of that currently, but as if the bill would pass, that we would give certain responsibilities to the Labor and Industry Division or department in order to further study this issue and report to us regarding findings as whether the state may pay certain taxes owed by employers, pay unemployment compensation, grant leaves of absence under the Family Medical Leave Act, and then the question of liability. I think those are all issues that fall under the jurisdiction of this committee.
Mr. Chair?
It's simply a report.
Senator Goodwin.
Well, you've got the date they're supposed to have the report done is June 1st, 2013. That's after we're out of session. So I'm not sure what or who would be here. Committees and divisions with primary jurisdiction is where the report's supposed to go, but sure hope we're out of session by June 1st.
Mr. Chair.
Technically, we'll still exist. So
that's true.
You can direct the staff. I won't be in the office waiting for it.
I won't either.
Mr. Chair, the date is probably not as important as the substance that we're trying to gain a hold of. We could probably even change that to January 15th of 2014 if we wanted to. I just thought that if we do go in this direction, we'd want this information as soon as possible, because then we'd have to change the effective date of the bill as well.
Oh, Mr.
And we do receive reports throughout the interim as well.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I would like my witnesses to respond, because they're the experts.
As your witnesses are considering this, members should be aware that the addition of this language may cause this bill to go to one or two additional committees. Besides being outside the subject matter jurisdiction of this committee, I think. Although, technically, we don't have a germaneness rule, so...
Mr. Chairman, I do oppose the amendment. I think it is redundant, and Mr. Zaffron and Mr. Lato are going to respond.
Mr. Zaffron.
Mr. Chair, this is a delivery model of home care services that is in use around the country, and it is also one that is already currently in use in parts of Minnesota's home and community-based services system. And there's no question as to what the state's obligations would be regarding these portions of employment, and there's nothing in our bill that would change those obligations, and so this is unnecessary and redundant.
Chairman Latt, Senator Limmer, thank you. To reiterate Mr. Zaffron's point for family child care providers, it's very similar. Nothing in this bill, none of the issues listed here and the obligations are in question in terms of the current relationship that the family child care providers have with the state of Minnesota, and it simply doesn't apply in a very similar fashion which Mr. Zaffron has described for the home care providers.
These are not state employees, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Limmer, if I'm reading this correctly, the lines 1.2 to 1.10 of your amendment would provide that there can be no list access for the purposes that are provided in the bill until after this report is made to the legislature. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Senator Goodwin's earlier comment, any delay in that date would delay the effectiveness of the legislation were it to become law.
It could, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Lemmer.
It could, and that's why the June 1st deadline is as close as possible to get that necessary information. I believe Senator Pappas mentioned in the previous committee, and I'm only hearing this hearsay, but she recognized that this is a new relationship with unions, employers, and employees. It's something that hasn't been formed yet, something unique. There are unanswered questions, the relationship with IRS, tax issues, job classifications, and whether or not these people are independent contractors or are they employees. And so these are all issues that should be addressed. And my hope was that we could have the department that handles this type of thing to weigh in and do a report and give it to us so that we know we're on the right track. I think that's a responsible track to go on. And instead of building lists and putting all sorts of machinery up front, putting the cart in front of the horse, that we proceed with at least all of the facts that we need to as we step into this new relationship.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
I just wanted to point out on page 2, line 2.11, 2.12, specifically says in the bill that this section does not require the treatment of family child care providers as public employees for any other purpose. And I believe there's similar language in section 2, article 2 of the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Hall.
I see we have another testifier. I wonder if they would want to weigh in, Cara Benson.
Ms. Benson? Welcome to the committee. As to this amendment, please, only.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cara Benson. I'm a program director with AcroCare, which is a PCA Choice provider and fiscal support entity for the consumer-directed community support services. CDCS is a waiver program where recipients receive an entitlement to pay for direct care services, among other things. Recipients hire the employee of their choice and pay the wages out of this program. This program is designed to be flexible in order to meet the needs of the individual recipient. AcroCare administers the payroll-related functions and processes expenses for recipients and their employees. Currently, there is no requirement for a fiscal support entity to report an employee's personal information to DHS. This leaves questions about how DHS will compile the list of individual providers. Will a fiscal support entity now be required to report to DHS who an employee is? Would the individual employer, which sometimes is the family themselves, need to authorize this release of information to DHS? What if they refuse? Does this change the classification of the employee's data? What information would be included on the list that is provided to the union? In performing the administrative work that goes along with the care our employees or the recipient's employees provide, I have noticed a few troubling things with this list provision of this legislation. In a survey conducted earlier this month with data collected among the current FSEs, 60% are family members, often in the same home as the recipient. This would, in effect, reveal who is receiving government funding. We would never disclose a list of medical assistance recipients. In reality, this bill does that. There is an issue of age. Some of the employees are as young as 14 years old in CDCS and 16 in PCA. These minors may want to simply go to school, come home, take care of their sibling, do their homework, and go to bed. It is unfair to hand their information to a union for recruitment purposes. This list will have approximately 31,000 names on it. If this bill passes, they will be considered state employees, giving their contact information to any third party, a union, an insurance agent, a political campaign, is a violation of their trust and adds one more thing to worry about on an already full plate. Also, this list will be inclusive of who is eligible to join the union. For billing purposes with the Department of Human Services, there is no distinction between traditional PCA employees and PCA choice employees. Traditional PCA is not covered under this bill. Make no mistake, our employees are eligible to be unionized under this bill, as they will be included in the list of signatures and votes. Along with the overall concern that this bill would move Minnesota away from a self-directed service model that allows individual to set up and manage their own care, we worry about the privacy of the employee's personal information. There are many questions about data collection and dissemination that needs to be answered before this proposal should be moved forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, we are certainly concerned about the privacy of the client, and that's why we specifically have the language on page 10 that says the list shall, it's 10.27, 10.28, the list shall not include the name of any participant or indicate that an individual provider is a relative of a participant or has the same address as a participant. So I believe that does protect the privacy of the client or participant.
Ms. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, isn't that the very same list that we talked about a few minutes ago that said that the subject of the list cannot remove themselves from it? And so it would be under the scrutiny of the public. Isn't that the same list?
Senator Pappas.
A public list, yes.
Yes, that's a public list, Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, but that is the provider that is public, not the recipient, not the client, calling it the participant. So you have the providers providing the services, and then you have the participant or the client who's receiving the services. So the person, the worker, the PCA who's providing the services, that person's identity would be public. But the person receiving the services, the client, that identity of that person is private.
Mr. Chair, the fact remains that the part, you got to get this right, the provider,
Or the PCA, call them either. The provider of the service.
The provider has no way to remove their name from the list?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
No, because of PELRA, it's a public name. But in terms of the registry, you also would, that one you can opt in or opt out. But obviously, it's to your advantage if you're looking for work to opt in. But for purposes of being able to organize, as a bargaining unit, then that name needs to be public. But you don't get the list. The exclusive bargaining unit does not get the list until they produced the names of 500 people who want an election.
All right. Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
When we make reference to those enrolled in PELRA, PELRA means they're state employees. And so are all of the providers now to be considered state employees?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, as I've stated before, only for purposes of organizing, not for any other purpose.
And that's explicitly stated in the legislation.
Senator Letts.
That's why your amendment is not necessary. Congrats to your amendment.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Senator Letts, Senator Pappas, excuse me. I understand. This is just to understand how you get the names for the list, not for the employment or for finding a provider, but the lists that are used for organizing purposes. I understand that if you are in childcare and you are registered, then there is a list that's public. But if you are a care provider, the second group, does the state already have a list of those care providers?
Does the state have a list?
Because of a license or because they have to be registered or They have to be approved. Is there already a there's not a public list of that group already? And if there isn't, how is that being formulated?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon, there is not a list, and we are asking DHS to formulate the list.
And my question is, how will you do that unless you go through who's receiving a benefit?
I think it's a question for DHS, how they intend to do that. I think there is someone here from DHS.
Is there someone here from DHS who can
answer
the question? Ms. Benson, will you please make sure you sign on the sheet there as well? Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alex Bartolik, and I am with the Department of Human Services. We would need there's several different provisions of different groups of employees. One for the PCAs. We would need to go back through their agency to confirm who is working under a self-directed option. So we do know the names of those employees. We don't always know for sure if they would qualify here. So we would have to verify through the PCA choice and PCA agencies which employees qualify, but we have their information. For people being providing consumer-directed services through the waivers, we would work with the fiscal support entities that are the ones who manage payroll. We would have to ask them for a list of any people who are employed through that model and get the information from them. And we've offered technical assistance, and we'll work with the author and others to try to look at some of the other potential provisions of people where we might not have an agency to go through, but the family might be hiring them to see if that's included. But otherwise, we would have to contact recipients for those programs where we issue grants to them, and they're the ones who actually handle all of the employment themselves without an agency.
And in that instance, they would give you the name of the person that they have hired to provide the PCA services.
Correct.
And then it's just that name of the person that's available on the list.
There's some questions about some of the data practices when you get into these different configurations. And again, we're willing to work with the author in trying to clarify the differences in some of the data practices.
Senator Sharon, I think it would be name and addresses under the statute, but nothing more.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemon.
While we have you up at the table, is the existing list now, is that available to the public of providers?
Mr. Chair, the existing PCA list, right now that's available through a data practices request. It's not open to the public.
And that's with PCA and the other category of that we're talking about with child care, is that an available public list?
Senator Limmer, let's clarify. I believe the data is public, but you have to ask for it through a data practices request. But the department can't say no, right, because it's public data.
Mr. Chair, there's differences between the child care and some of the direct support workers. And they're not licensed, and we've had some We need to spend some time and work with the author on what information is public. And I do have our counsel here if you'd like more specific information about the data practices component.
Sounds good.
To the witness, I didn't catch your last name, ma'am.
Alex Bartolik.
Bartolik. Do you know, is any of that data classified as not public in any form at this time?
Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to step aside and let somebody else answer the question.
Sure. Go ahead and please state your name.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Akbai, and I'm the Chief General Counsel for the Department of Human Services.
Welcome. Can you answer the question?
Thank you.
Did you hear the question?
I did hear the question. Currently, right now, with respect to the second provision of the bill relating to PCAs, we have some data privacy concerns at the agency with the release of the names and addresses under the current legislation as proposed. The release of this information as public depends on the treatment of it. If the information is treated as employment data, the names of the PCAs would be public. However, their home addresses would not be public. So it depends on whether these are government employees or not. If the data is treated as licensing data, the information would also be public, and that would include the names and addresses. However, there's a question surrounding the definition of whether this actually falls within licensing data. I understand that the information requested for the child care providers under Article 1 would qualify as public data, but there's a distinction because of the registration requirement with the agency. Regarding PCAs, the definition of registration becomes important because they're not actually licensed providers. Within the Government Data Practices Act, it's Minnesota Statutes 13.46. That would be subdivision 4 on licensing data. It allows for the disclosure of information collected, maintained, or used for persons licensed or registered with the state. And in this case, there is a question of whether or not the PCAs who may be enrolled with the agency are actually registered within the definition of this provision. So we do have some questions surrounding whether or not this information, the name and the address, would be public.
Okay. So what you're saying is under current statute and under the bill's proposal, there's some uncertainty as to exactly what the data practices status would be?
That is correct.
And if the goal of the legislation is for at least the name and the address to be public, then that ought to be made stated explicitly in the bill?
We would probably need some additional language in the bill requiring the agency to release such private data, if it is in fact private data.
You're saying you're not certain if it's private data or not?
We're not.
Right now.
We're not.
Okay, but at least the language, if it's stated that this was for this limited purpose was to be treated as public data, that would erase the uncertainty, right?
That would erase the uncertainty. However, we're willing to work with the author on this.
Okay, well, this is the committee to do it in. So we're not going to work on this tomorrow. We're going to work on it right now.
On that point, Mr. Senator Chair, Goodwin, have you talked to the Department of Administration about the Data Privacy Division and whether or not this is private data?
We did, we spoke with Stacey Christensen at IPAD, and she had the same concern as to whether or not this data would come in as under registration data, licensing data.
Well, I have another question. Aren't usually licensed people, any kind of license in Minnesota, isn't that normally public data?
Yes, and in this case, the PCAs are not licensed.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Okay. Senator Ms. Ockby, does the department have any policy concern about this data being made public for the limited purpose outlined in this bill? Just the name and address.
I guess I haven't spoken with the policy concerns on behalf of the department. I have my own ideas. But I haven't. I'm not here to represent the department's policy position.
Okay. Senator Pappas, is it your desire for the addresses to be public as well as the name so it can be utilized for this purpose?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Difference.
Council, want you?
Mr. Chairman, I guess the issue is whether you can classify the data as private, but say it has to be released for purposes that are in the bill, versus just saying public, which means anybody in the public can come and get it. So there's two different approaches you can take.
Mr. Chairman, I think the sensitivity toward the data was why there was the 500 name threshold. So the data would be private unless there were 500 names that were presented to the DHS, and then the entire list would be provided. So there had to be some indication from personal care attendants that they wanted to do an election.
Purposes of this.
But your goal is only to release that information for purposes of facilitating union organization, is that right? Okay, and not to make it more generally available to the public.
That's right.
Correct? Okay.
And Senator Latz.
Senator Sharon.
And Senator Pappas, you're able somehow in this arena to confirm that the 500 signature PCA signatures are PCAs? Is there a process by which they aren't just getting 500 names, we're getting 500 names of those who are being impacted?
Explain how that works.
Chairman, Senator Sharon,
that
would be up to the Bureau of Mediation Services to make that determination.
I guess my question, though, is there, I don't, with this conversation, I don't know the methodology by which that can occur. If there's not a list that confirms that these persons are PCAs, they're not licensed, you know, this is difficult. And they aren't required, in order to do this, to do background checks, right? There's not a background check process going on here or anything that pulls their name into a public arena.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon, they are paid by medical assistance. So there's some way to determine that. They're on the payroll.
Let me ask a specific question.
Mr. Chair, right. Senator Sharon.
Mr. Zaffron.
Yes.
There's two separate provisions in the bill. One is to request that the Department of Human Services create this list for this purpose. It is a separate section where we delineate list access and representation and election. And so the department would be asked to create this list regardless, so that if there is a showing of interest of 500 people who wish to move forward with the process of choosing a representative, that it's only at that point that that list would then be shared, made available.
But Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, but that doesn't really answer the question on whether it's 500 people, period, or 500 PCAs. That's what we're trying to get at. I mean, I think we need to clarify that in the bill, that it's 500 PCAs.
They have to be 500 individual providers.
Right, right.
They have to be 500 PCAs. And that's, that is in the legislation on 613.
Senator, I guess that would be the problem. Excuse me, Senator Letts. That would be their problem. But I think that it's a circle. You know, you got to have the list first, it seems to me. You got to know who are the PCAs, and then if 500 of those PCAs are on your list.
Elliott can explain how they do it.
Mr. Elliott.
For the record, my name is Brian Elliott. I'm the State Council Director for SEIU here in Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, Senator, as Ms. Akbe mentioned, currently the list of names is of PCAs is available as a data is publicly available data under Freedom of Information request, and so what we have been doing is attempting to identify and have conversations, and we have actually had conversations at this point with thousands of personal care attendants. But it's an incomplete list at this point. And so what we would be doing is we would be gathering signatures, authorization cards from those that we can identify as personal care attendants presently in the absence of a list. That would then trigger access to the list, and to the earlier question, based on that list, BMS would need to verify, or Department of Health would need to verify that they are PCAs, that list is of individual providers as defined by this bill.
All right, Senator Hall, you have
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would like Ms. Benson to respond to this, if she could, please.
Ms. Benson, to this point, please. And Ms. Ockby and Ms. Bartolik, if you could make sure you sign the form, the sheet as well as a witness. Thank you. Ms. Benson.
Mr. Chair, I have two responses, if I might. I don't recall who said it, but somebody said the employees were being paid by medical assistance. They are not. They are paid by our agency. We bill medical assistance. And then also, I forgot my second point. I apologize. Well, I guess I'll just leave
you
it out there.
You think of it,
right
you
now.
Can wave, and we'll give you a chance to say.
I certainly will.
All right.
Oh, yes, excuse me. I thank you. One of my colleagues just reminded me. This list of PCAs, as my testimony I stated earlier, there are two different types of PCA people that provide PCA. There is traditional PCA, and there is PCA choice. The background study is conducted through DHS, and there is no distinction between PCA choice employees and PCA traditional employees. So I'd just like to offer that information.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Benson. Senator Orban.
Mr. Chair, a question about whose information would be disclosed if it's triggered by the 500-person list. Would somebody who's not licensed, would their information be disclosed?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Benson,
these
providers
are...
If you know the answer to this question.
Excuse me?
If you know this answer to this particular question.
Yeah, these are unlicensed services.
And Mr. Chair, that's my point. So the private care provider who's not licensed, even though they've not been subject to licensure by the state of Minnesota, their name would appear on a list because DHS is aware of them. And so as soon as the 500-name list is triggered, all that information becomes public.
Mr. Chairman, that's a question for me. We are not advocating that all the information becomes public to everyone. We just would like the information to be made available to the organizations that are attempting to organize.
Mr. Chair.
After they've shown that there are 500 PCAs that have an interest.
Mr. Chair, how is that information restricted? If only certain people get the information, how does this
anyone
restrict
who,
that?
Senator anyone Pappas. Who presents the Bureau of Mediation Services with any employee organization who presents the Bureau of Mediation Services with 500 cards that are signed by PCAs indicating that they would like to have the opportunity to vote for a union, then the entire list that DHS has compiled of names and addresses would be released to them.
Mr. Chair?
To just that organization.
To just that organization. It could be two organizations, to any organization.
But not released
not
to
released
the general
to,
public.
No, to my understanding, not to the public.
Well, Mr.
It
Chair.
Would it be available to the general public?
We are not advocating that it be available to the general public.
Well.
Okay, so there's nothing in the bill that states one way or the other whether that
Ms. Pontius can correct me, but I don't believe there is.
Ms. Pontius?
Mr. Chairman. To make sure that, and because I think this was the gray area we've been talking about, which is it's not clear if the data are private or public under current law, and it might depend on the status of the PCA and their employment circumstances. The bill right now, if you look on page 10, lines 25 and 26, is the name and addresses of individual providers have been paid for providing direct support services. So I guess the question is, who is that universe of providers? If you don't want this to be accessible to the general public, I think you need a specific data classification here for that list. Now, the child care providers
are already public.
They are public now. You can leave that the way it is, but this is might be distinguishable, and if that's the case, you need language saying that the data that the list is private data. That would be advisable if that's the intent.
The other thing I should point
Senator
out to the committee is that language was added in a previous committee, I think it was in Human Services, that everyone whose name is on the list was going to be notified by the Commissioner of Human Service that their name had been released to the employee organization. So okay. that was also a concern that was expressed in previous committee, and this amendment was adopted.
So, Senator Pappas, I think the question for you right now from a policy standpoint is when those names are released to the organizing, to the union organization, is it your desire to have those names restricted only to use by that organization, in which case Ms. Pania says it needs a separate data classification, or do you wish for that data to be available to the general public once it becomes releasable to that organization?
Mr. Chairman, obviously it's up to the committee, but our desire is that it be restricted.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Orman.
I find that to be very problematic because it would benefit the organizing organizations, those that want to organize, because they would make a data request once they serve their 500 cards, and then they would get a list of all the licensed and non-licensed care provider, all the care providers, whether they're licensed or not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't mean to interrupt you, Senator Orman. I just wanted to be sure we are clear that the PCAs that we're talking about are not licensed.
That is,
they are not licensed.
Right. And
right.
Mr. Senator. Chair and Senator Pappas, I'm concerned about these people that aren't going through licensure. They don't otherwise submit to be having their information known publicly. Now you're going to make sure that information is available to certain people. And I'm concerned about that restriction. What about the folks that don't want to organize? Will they have to submit 500 cards in order to get the information? Or doesn't that put them at a disadvantage if they also can't access it, just because they might oppose the organization?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I'm kind of thinking through your comment. We were thinking more for privacy purposes, for commercial purposes, that we wouldn't want the list to be public. I mean, the members could feel elsewise, I suppose. It's just for our purposes, we thought we were being respectful of and only allowing the minimal information that would be necessary for people to be able to make a choice if they wanted to be in a union or not, so that they could improve their working conditions, get some training, connect with each other. I think that, how is an employee organization structured?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how an association, for example, is defined in state law. If you're talking about a group that wanted to organize among PCAs but did not want to use a union to organize, wanted to just use an association. It seems to me once the registry is up and people opt in to be in the registry, those names would all be public and available.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Orban.
It seems to me that throughout all the proceedings that I've heard, you've been very concerned about the proponents of organization, but not necessarily concerned about those that oppose it. And this is one of those areas where I think that you're not concerned sufficiently about those that would oppose.
Senator Orban, because why don't we focus on
I am,
on
Mr.
policy,
Chair.
Not on the intent.
I am
the,
absolutely focused
advocates.
On policy, Mr. Chair. And so I'm talking about all those that would oppose. What you're restriction, at least the way you've said you intend it to apply, would give access to those that support organization and deny access to those that oppose it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I mean, what's your suggestion? Are you suggesting that we make the data public?
Mr. Chair, I'm suggesting
should some other entity have to also present 500.
Mr.
500 cards saying they want access to this information. I mean, we are trying to put a, we have not just said it's automatic with the data request. We've had said there has to be a significant group that is interested in this.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Orman.
I don't support the bill at all. I mean, let's just be clear, and I know that you do support this bill, but I think it's incumbent upon you to make sure it's fair to both sides if you're going to adopt a process, and I don't think that this process is fair to both sides. And I don't think that giving the information to one group and not the other is fair. And so I think this is problematic in your proposal. And so I don't think any of this information should be revealed whether somebody submits 500 cards or not. I think privacy should be maintained, and I'm not sure how you can build a scheme that will protect the interests of both sides and also allow this information to be made public or even privately accessed by some. I think you have a problem with this bill.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
Senator Ortman, if people do not want to organize, they can just say no and vote no. No?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
You're giving advantages within the context of this bill to the proponents of organization, and you're not giving that same access to information to the opponents. And so you're trying to build a fight that isn't fair, and I don't support that.
Senator Limmer, we have your amendment actually still on the table. I'm let the discussion go on because there are relevant questions before the committee.
Mr. Chair, we've had lots of discussions about data privacy and who has access to certain information and who does not. And I've repeated it many times, and this is a primary example. When we're talking of information, that old phrase that says knowledge is power. And if some people have information and other people don't, then there's a distinct advantage for those who have it. And that's wrong. If you're going to have a fair consideration of whether a group wants to do something, whether it's a union organization or not, then all of the players need to have access to that information, or none of the players have to have access to that information. That's the fair doctrine that this state has always maintained under data privacy and how we share it. Now we have a bill before us that only favors one side, and that is not consistent with data practice provisions in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, you're the data privacy experts this committee, so if the committee wants to make some changes, then please propose them.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Members, we're having an amendment drafted by council to address this, and it's not quite ready for specific language yet, but the intent of the amendment would be to make the data private until it reaches that 500 threshold, and then the data becomes public, so that both a union that has presented the cards and any other member of the public that wishes access to that list for purposes of participating in the process would have access, equal access to the data.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Ortman.
Perhaps council can advise, or maybe it's your intention, but right now that information is private. So if I'm folks that are private care providers, their personal information isn't public.
Actually, Senator Ortman, we've heard from the data practices expert for the department that they are uncertain as to the current status, whether it is public or private, and suggested that we apply some clarification in this bill as to how we want data released under these circumstances to be released. So I guess you have the option, if you disagree, to vote against that amendment. But
Mr. Chair, I'd like to think that that's private information because these folks haven't been through licensing.
Okay. Well,
and it should be maintained private, and I'm not sure why we're going to make such sweeping changes to now make public what currently is not being made public.
I've got a comment.
Senator Limmer, we have your amendment on the table, the A80 amendment. I'd like to have a vote on the A80 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I would encourage a no vote.
Right, that's for roll call.
Senator Limmer has asked for a roll call on the A80 amendment. There will be a roll call. Staff will take the roll.
Mr. Chair, before we vote, we've had a very big conversation about this. Can you tell me what the A80 accomplishes so I also know what it doesn't yet accomplish?
Senator Ortman, are you...
It's only
our discussion went afield of the A80
right.
amendment, but it's basically a report, and it prohibits any union activity from taking place until after the report is presented to the legislature. Am I characterizing that accurately, Senator Limmer?
That's correct, and the report would require that the Department of Labor and Industry create a report, as the chair said, especially to focus on whether the state must pay an employer's share of federal taxes owed by employers, pay unemployment compensation, grant leaves of absence under the Family and Medical Leave Act, and what is the question of liability for these individuals and any other obligations that may be imputed to the state.
Okay. That is a description of the 80 Amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
I think that these are legitimate concerns.
Latz.
No.
Hall.
Yes.
Ortman.
Yes.
Cohen. Limmer.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Sharon.
No.
Dietzick.
No.
There being three in favor, four opposed, the amendment does not.
You going to do something?
Mr. Chairman, I've got language that would basically, for the PCA part of the bill, not for the child care part, it would classify the list as private data. But then it would, if you get to the point in time where you've had at least 500 providers that have indicated they wish to be represented. So if you go back on page 6, line subdivision 9, basically, where they would get access to the list, then at that point, the list would become public. So I can read it out.
Why don't you read the exact amendment?
Mr. Chairman, as I'm rewriting it here, on page 6, line 16, after the period insert, notwithstanding section 256B.0711, comma, subdivision 11, comma, paragraph F, which is where the data will be classified as private. The list provided to an employee organization under this subdivision is public data.
I'll offer that amendment.
All right.
And then it goes with, then the second part that would go with that would be on page 10, line 28. Summarized it. After the period insert.
What line?
On page 10, line 28.
28.
Insert, the list is private data on individuals as defined in section 13.02, comma, provided that, and then it would go on to the language, the commissioner shall share the list, et cetera. So the sharing would be there.
And Mr. Okay. Chair, to speak to that amendment, and maybe I'm wrong, but I believe in most cases when somebody is being paid by the government, that should be public data on who is being paid by Medicaid or whatever different programs we have. I would say that I don't mean people that are getting services, but people that are getting paid to do services, perform services. That normally is public data for the most part.
Okay. So Senator Goodwin moves the amendment in the language just described by Ms. Pontius. All in favor?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman.
I should have asked the author.
Just one comment that I just want to make clear that so the process would be that the union, the employee organization, will go out and spend months and months talking to PCAs and asking them if they would like to start the process toward becoming a union, and they get 500 signatures to sign that. Then they present that to the Bureau of Mediation Services, and then the BMS releases all the private data to anyone. So, you know, Senator Ortman was concerned a little bit that the deck was stacked a little too in favor of the union, and now I feel like the deck might be stacked a little bit the other way. Because we're not saying anyone who gets the data has to bring forward 500 names. We're saying anyone who brings home 500 names, the data will be released to everyone. So, it's a very high mountain to climb here.
Well, Senator Pappas, we're trying to find a solution to this ambiguity in the statute. If you have a different solution, we welcome hearing from
Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to go with the committee's solution. I'm just wanted to express my concerns.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Ortman,
I think
on this point.
if you're going to make it available to one side, you absolutely must make it available to the other side. But I'm still concerned about the fact that now, if this amendment is adopted, you're destroying whatever privacy these folks currently have. It's all gone. And so I think it's a Hobson's choice. I think it's terrible. And I think we're heading in the wrong direction completely, but I think you need to know what the consequences are of the amendment that you're drafting, and you're destroying the privacy of many families.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Does it make sense to have the department send out, or the Bureau of Mediation Services, or somebody to send out things to the PCAs where it's still private within the department, but they're not necessarily given out so that they can try to, the union can try to find 500 people that are interested, or might be interested at least voting on a union? I mean, rather than making all of this information public, if everybody's concerned about that, I don't know. Like, I guess that's a question for council.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to take up the committee's time and complicate things. I think we'll just live with the amendment.
Senator Sharon?
Thank you. I think that would put the cost of this onto the right. It remains now with those who are wanting to organize rather than with the department. So I support it staying in the hands of the organizing unit. But I wonder if there's some language that could be added to this that says any that responds to the issue that Senator Pappas is saying, that if we want to have the opposition have access to this list also to argue against unionization, that they have to also come up with 500 signatures in order to have access to the names, to ask them to meet the same requirements that you do to have access to that list, and not to have everybody, once you have provided 500 signatures, to make this public to everybody. That really is troubling to me. I think it should be public, provided for those who provide the signatures, and if there's another group organizing against this that wants to do 500 signatures, great. That really evens the playing field in terms of data access.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I respectfully disagree. Then you're putting an onus on those that don't want to be organized to go out and organize to oppose the effort. They just want to oppose it, and they probably want to just keep their privacy. So I think that if it's going to be released, it should be released to both sides to make the fight fair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call. Vote, please.
I'm persuaded by that. I think that's right.
Senator Dietzick, I think Senator Ortman is right. Before the vote?
Yeah, there's been so many discussions back and forth. Can we just clarify what the actual amendment is? Thank you.
Senator Goodwin moves as follows.
On page 6, line 16, after the period, insert, notwithstanding section 256B.0711, subdivision 11, paragraph F, the list provided to an employee organization under the subdivision is public data. So, and then on page 10, line 28, after the period, insert, the list is private data on individuals as defined in section 13.02, comma, provided that.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Ortman, and then we're going to vote. No more
from
comments.
From my point of view, it looks like we are given this choice, which is a terrible choice. We have to choose between making sure that both sides have the information versus destroying the privacy of all of these families.
All right.
And
Senator Ortman, I think you've already made this point. Do you have something?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry you're uncomfortable, but we all wanted to make sure that we know what we're voting on.
Senator Ortman, do you have a new point to make on the question, or shall we go to a vote?
Mr. Chair, I'm ready for a vote.
All right. The clerk will take the roll.
Latz.
Yes.
Hall.
No.
Ortman.
No.
Cohen. Limmer.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Dietzick.
Yes.
There being 4 in favor, 3 against, the amendment is passed. Senator Limmer.
I'd like to introduce the A-70 amendment.
Okay, members, we're going to go until 5-3, and then we're going to consider the amendment. But then
we'll be brief, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have another amendment.
On the bill to a conclusion.
I have another amendment as well.
Senator Ortman, it better be short. We've been on this bill for an hour and a half, and you haven't offered an amendment yet. So,
Mr. Chair, I haven't had a chance yet.
The A-70 amendment. Senator Limmer, has this amendment been provided to the chief author?
No, it has not. Sorry for that.
Do you have a copy now, Senator Pappas?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Very quickly, I can read the amendment, and I would urge the committee to vote no.
Senator Limmer, you want to briefly describe your amendment, and then we will consider the vote?
Well, Mr. Chair, we've had a lot of discussion about the integrity of data and the relationship with the BMS, and the bill itself requires BMS to maintain and provide lists and conduct an election. The A70 amendment gives BMS rulemaking authority simply to ensure that data integrity of the provider list and regulate proper collection of petition cards. A little bit, maybe fairness might be the word to describe this, and give some assurance that there's some attempt for data integrity. Since we haven't really defined who is responsible, this amendment would do that. The effective dates of election and petition process would follow the adoption of these rules. That's all it is, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, rulemaking is a two-year process. I think this is unnecessary bureaucracy to go through, and that I think that we are able as a committee, you are able as a committee to determine the data concerns, and so I just think it's just an attempt to delay the process.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Limmer.
Data integrity sometimes does take time, and if we're going to do this, if this is the step in the policy of the state of Minnesota to do this, wouldn't we want to make sure we do it right and protect the data integrity of the list? And if we don't care to do that, I suppose we can go your route, Senator Pappas. But we've had a long history in this state to protect data privacy of our citizens. This is not an unusual request, and it certainly is one that I may grant you it may take a little time, but I think the people of Minnesota are deserving of that time.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
One less sarcastic comment. The Bureau of Mediation Services customarily does this. They do conduct elections, and they have a history of doing that, and they have the expertise, and they know how to do it in a secure fashion. So I think we can trust the Bureau of Mediation Services to handle this.
All right.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
There's been a request for a roll call. There will be. Clerk will take the roll.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Hall?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Cohen? Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Sharon?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
There being three in favor, four against, the amendment is not adopted. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a separate question. On the registry lists, can the union use these registry lists for fundraising, political or other?
Senator Hall, the registry list it's not a registry list. It's a registry. The lists
Thank
are
you.
Separate items in this statute. The registry is for the purpose of job matching between people who want services and people who want to provide the services.
So the answer is no. Correct?
The registry is a public list that people can opt in if they choose to do so, as I understand it, correct?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, there's the registry, and then once these other lists, I mean, once they get the list, there's nothing that specifically regulates how it's used.
So it could then be used for political purposes.
Once the lists become public, then they are public lists.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would like to
Senator
offer
Ortman.
The A71 amendment.
Okay. Senator Ortman's going to offer the A71 amendment. Where's the list? Good idea.
Mr.
Section 3.
Senator Ortman, do you wish to describe your amendment, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. What the A71 does, very simply, it just clarifies that when individual providers become organized and unionized, they would not be state employees for purposes of tort liability.
For purposes of tort liability?
Tort liability.
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, they're not state, they're only state employees for purposes of organizing, so I think this is consistent. Not state employees for anything else.
Mr. Chair, does that mean she supports my amendment?
I support your amendment, sir. Now you owe me.
Really?
Now you can support the bill
really?
By adopting it.
Really?
Ms. Pontius indicates there's a second place in the bill where this needs to go to be
Chair,
consistent.
It should also be on page 2, line 12, after the period, the same sentence.
Okay, Senator Ortman, you incorporate that into your amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any further discussion on the A71 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion on this Senate file? Not seeing any.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
I'd like to move that Senate file. I'm trying to find it here.
778.
778 be recommended to be passed to the Finance Committee without recommendation. That we pass this to Finance Committee without recommendation.
Right. Senator Goodwin moves that Senate file 778.
As amended.
As amended, be passed without recommendation and be re-referred to the Senate Committee on Finance.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Is this the final vote on this that
this
we're taking right now?
On this bill, yes.
Oh, Senator Latz? Excuse
Senator
me.
Sharon.
I was just given some information that a amendment that was passed in Health and Human Services about disclosure requirements, authorization disclosure requirements, periodic dues, let's see, disclosure requirements for the ballots for the purposes of the Minnesota chapter that were
was not engrossed.
That were entered is the word. I'm sorry, my brain is fried for words. It's not engrossed, right? And so we're hoping that you'll be willing to allow us to introduce this so that it's engrossed into the bill.
Okay, I'll ask a procedural question of counsel. If the amendment was adopted in a previous committee, even though it was not engrossed in the committee report before us, is it simply a clerical matter of including it in the next engrossment, or do we need to readopt it?
Mr. Chairman, if it was not included in the committee report that was in the Senate Journal on the Senate floor, it's not in the bill. Even if it was an error in the committee report, so you do need to adopt it again.
Okay. Do we have that amendment that we can distribute to the members?
Everybody come on, look at it.
I was just handed this. I don't know where the staff
Mr.
is that gave this to me.
Mr.
Copies?
Chairman, in interest of time, we are going to the Finance Committee, and I'd be happy to add it there.
Okay. I think this being a technical correction, I think we can accomplish that in the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
I would like to amend the Goodwin motion for passage and re-refer to the Jobs Committee.
There's a motion to amend the motion. It's on the floor. So the question is whether or not the Goodwin motion should be amended, that the re-referral should be to the Jobs Committee instead of to the Finance
right.
Committee.
Some discussion, Mr. Chair.
Brief discussion,
brief,
Senator Lemon.
Brief discussion. I don't believe there's been any chance for the opponents to discuss how this would affect their careers. There doesn't appear to be any talk thus far of how this bill will affect agencies. Agencies are not exempt, and there's no discussion of how union dues would be collected. Some of these individuals are private independent contractors. I'm not quite sure how that would work. And I believe the bill needs a discussion centered around how it affects people's livelihoods. We're making a bold step here, Mr. Chair, and I believe that type of discussion needs to go to the Jobs Committee. And I ask for roll call.
It'll be a roll call. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, we have had 8 hours of committee hearing on this bill already. And as I mentioned earlier, PELRA is under the jurisdiction of the State and Local Government Committee. And so if it was referred to the Jobs Committee, I guess my guess is that the chair of the State and Local Government Committee would protest that referral, and we might end up in Rules Committee. Given the fact that the Jobs Chair has not requested it, I don't think it's appropriate to send it to a committee that doesn't have jurisdiction over this issue.
All right, there's been a request for a roll call. Clerk will take Senator Ormond.
I just want to respectfully disagree. I know that you're the president, you're the chair of the State and Local Government Committee, and I know that you're the chief author of the bill, but it would be appropriate for this to go to the Jobs Committee.
Senator Hall, to this
point. And for what it's worth, as minority lead, I'd like to see it go there.
All right, the record complete on this discussion. The clerk will take the roll on this, on Senator Limmer's motion to amend the Goodwin motion.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Hall?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No. You know, I really enjoy
sitting. Senator Sharon?
No.
We enjoy you too.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Did you know this is the there being three in favor and five opposed, the amendment does not prevail. We are on Senator Goodwin's motion to send this Senate File 778 forward without recommendation and be re-referred to the Senate Finance Committee.
Roll call.
There being a request for a roll call, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Latz?
Yes.
Senator Hall?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
That one's yours.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick?
Yes.
There being five in favor and three opposed, the motion is adopted.
You can do it.
The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
This committee is in recess until 6 p.m. This evening, members, please try to be prompt. We have a full agenda. Thank you.